The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by the boys. That is the Stephen and the Peter. All right, boys.
Hello.
Hello.
It's nice to have you here, boys. It seems like we've been doing this for ages.
I'm always here.
You're always there in your house, Steve. Yeah, we're not going to speak to you all the time.
Doesn't talk much.
Yeah. No. But Pete, where are you now? Where are you at the moment? Are you in French France?
No, I'm back in English England.
Oh, I see. And is it good to be back? Nice weather here, isn't it?
Oh, it's pretty bleak, isn't it?
do you know what? I did the same. I spent a week with my father in Tenerife because he's got holidays, can't hit the wife, of course, because she's at home and he's a bit stumbly these days. He had a stroke. He still thinks he's about 50, I think, you know? He's trying to go off the rocks and dive into the water, and he can't even walk on the rocks. And I'm holding his hand, just nuts. But anyway, it was like 26 degrees out there, you know, sunny every day, pretty much. Come back into, flying to Cardiff. Do you know what? It's amazing being on a Cardiff flight. You're surrounded by middle-aged Welsh people, all the way over, just talking nonsense, you know? Oh, yes, yes. Well, she said that, and he said that, yeah, oh, yeah. Anyway, we flew to Cardiff. Tipping down with rain, gale force winds. It was not. I don't see how they landed the plane. Driving home, windscreen wipers on full whack all the way home back to Southampton. So it's like, my word, I can see why people just live in Tenerife or something. You know, it's so nice, the weather. But
can I just make a point on that plane? You are one of the middle-aged Welsh people talking.
Do you know what? I know it's odd, isn't it? But I still see myself as not middle-aged.
Or, no, exactly. Like your dad thinks he's 50. You think you're 30.
Yeah. When does middle-aged start? But it's odd, really.
It's gone.
It is.
Your old age now.
Yeah. That was the good old days, the middle-aged days. But it's funny, just surrounded by Welsh accents. I've been living, obviously, in England for a while, but it is nuts. They're talking absolutely nonsense. The Welsh are very good at small talk. And they do want to talk to you as well. I'm like, if you go to a place like London, people don't talk to you on public transport or anything like that, do they? But in Wales, people talk to you like you're part of the family or something, you know?
So this week because it's been half term in Wales this week, and like all the shops have just been rammed, and exactly the same thing. All you hear is everyone just talking crap around you.
I know.
Like, oh, shut up.
I know. It's just like, get my bag. So where you been then? Like, where have I been? I've just come off the same flight as you, you fool. Tenerife. Oh, yes, lovely.
New York.
I know, On your own? It's like digging for quail. No, I'm with my father, you know. And I start talking about him then. He's like, he always goes to Tenerife every year. He can't go on his own these days now. Lovely. I tell you what, though, here's a trick. When I go on holidays with Megan, right, she's very efficient. We're at the airport like 3 hours before, some ridiculous 4 hours. And if you book a lounge, even 5 hours, maybe just get your money free, sort of your value for money from the lounge. But me and my father, we got there, sort of going back to Tenerife, and it was at the airport. We were a bit late. We caught in a traffic jam, and we got there about 3/4 an hour, before the flight takes off, 1 hour. And there was no queue, right? We put our bags on, and obviously your bags go on last, so they come off first. Now, with Megan's the other way around, we're on first, we're first on the plane, everything, and the bags are the last to come off. And you realise, when we get to Cardiff, me and my father's bag was about the fourth bag to come out. It's perfect. So next time, if you want to avoid all the queues, you haven't booked the lounge or anything, just turn up late. Turn up late, it's easy.
I love you to see you convince Megan to do that.
She's not going to do that at all. Yeah. Anyway, boys, Remember the 5th of November. It's that night, isn't it? With bloody year, just go and set bangers off everywhere. What is wrong with people? Last night it happened as well. Just setting bangers off. Stop it! Just stop it! It's noisy. The animals don't like it. What are you doing? Yeah. Grow up! It's a guy down the road there, it's a couple of grand's worth of fireworks. Mate, stop it. Grow up, please. It's so annoying, isn't it? But Guy Fawkes.
Is that middle aged thing you're talking about?
Yeah. But no, there are still people my age doing that. I don't understand that. Do you? What's the excitement in that for a middle aged bloke just setting off in his back garden on his own, setting off fireworks? Mate, look at yourself. Grow up.
Get back
in the house. Have a beer or something. Watch some TV. Watch a good drama. Yeah. Guy Fawkes, I realise, he Anonymous now copied his face, didn't they? You know, Anonymous the mask. That's Guy Fawkes, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's a cool look, isn't it?
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Are you doing anything for bonfires, boys? Boys, you know, bonfires.
Oh, absolutely not.
You're not standing your guard. Steve, you normally go to friends for nonsense, do you?
I'm going to Bushy to work for the fireworks up there.
Oh, yeah. Oh. He likes a bit of Bushy.
The home of George Michael.
Homo George... Steve, that's a bit... You can't say that. Homo George Steve. Michael. What is wrong with
home
you?
Home of.
Oh, sorry, sorry. Homo George Michael. Okay, Steve. All right. No need to point that out. It's fine.
God
if, you, you know, if you love men, it's fine. As long as there's love. That's what I think about life. As long as you love someone, love is the thing we need. Less hate we need. You know, but you can allow to love who you want as long as they is, as long as they're consenting. You know, that's the main thing. So did you see, first of all, let's go on to the finance stuff. Did you see the Bank of England statement, Andrew Bailey? Did you see that?
Briefly, I have been living in blissful ignorance in France. I've been sort of casually looking at it, but yes, can you recap for us, please?
Did you see it, Steve?
I saw the highlights. I didn't really watch it, no.
Andrew Bailey came on. Basically, they raised interest rates, didn't they? It's one of the biggest rises.
Record high. Yeah,
record high. 3%, right? Let's put it into context. Mm. You know, it's not like the 80s. Where,
no, all right, not record 115% high.
115%
yeah.
or something, where it's just crazy. But he literally said, this is going to be the worst recession on record. I thought, what are you saying that for? Why are you trying to scare people? It's like, you know, oh, do you know the great financial crash? This is like a walk in the park, that was. This will be the worst one ever. Awful, this will be. This time next year, you'll be scrabbling around in the gutter looking for food. It'll be like Victorian times. You'll be like Oliver Twist, you will. Yeah, stay safe, have some food. Oh, you wait. You wait, it's going to be nasty.
Can I ask something about this? Because, like, interest rates and, like, mortgage... borrowing, like, it's just going up, but I'm just thinking, like, this is still way lower than we were paying like 10, 15 years ago, so I don't understand the big deal. Like,
oh, no, Steve, it's going to be the worst recession ever.
To me, like, interest rates have been, to me, like, almost ridiculously too low, but is that just because I'm used to, when I first got my mortgage out, they were a lot higher? I don't know.
It is.
We all coped back then, so why did we not cope again?
It is, but that's exactly, that's what I was thinking. Okay, listen to me, it may be a bit of a tough time ahead, but why is he laying on so thick, you know? This is going to be the worst recession on record. First of all, you know, forecasts aren't never that accurate. It's never, you know, black and white, like on the paper that they write down. It doesn't happen like that. You may get growth. You may get even sort of Putin stopping the war, which will help everything. You know, there's lots of different factors. China opening back up after zero COVID lockdowns. That may stimulate growth as well because they're one of the biggest economies in the world. So there's lots of things that play into this. But him just trying to scare people, I thought, why is he... And I thought about this for a while.
Isn't it about trying to control spending?
Yes, and that's it. It's psychological. We all know, right? Yeah. If, you know, you are faced with tough times, things go up, prices go up, you start psychologically tightening your belts. Everyone does, you know? Yeah. I was saying, if I talk to Paul Hill, Paul Hill's done very well. He's not short of a few bob. But he said, even me and my wife are looking, you know, being careful with the heating. And so we, in our house, I'm sitting here with a heated blanket on my legs. I'm not putting the heating on in my office. I think, why? I'm not going to be skinted by switching the heating on, you know, being quite concerned. But it makes people adjust their behaviour, doesn't it? Everyone has. Everyone's starting to spend a bit less. Oh, look at the prices. It's all going up. And so that has a massive knock-on effect to the economy. And that's what they want to do. They want to trash the economy. That's the only way to bring inflation down. But he's not understanding. It's not consumer durables and all that stuff, or discretionary spend, like, you know, bars of chocolate or stuff like that that's the problem. It's energy. That's the problem. And how do you bring that down? Even now, have you seen I think National Grid have started up this scheme. They're going to have a scheme, a reward scheme, if you just don't use your electricity at peak times, because there's going to be blackouts happening, they say. No, to avoid blackouts, the guy who's listening to the guy yesterday on Radio 5 saying, we're quite confident there won't be any blackouts, but just in case, we're going to give a little reward scheme if you don't use your electricity at certain times. Now, would you do this? You're going to earn up to £100. It's a handful of days over winter, and they say, basically, you have to have a smart meter, but the handful of people, I think it's about a million people, I think, they're going to give them incentives. So if you don't use, you know, I think it's between 4 and 7, something like that. I think 4 and 8, 8 o'clock in the evening. If you don't use energy intensive stuff, you'd be rewarded with £100 off your bill. Would you take part in that, Stephen Pete?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have a smart meter, so I couldn't. But I would.
We've got a smart Peter, though. I've got a smart Peter. Yeah, just say that. Yeah, but I was thinking, what they need to do is gamify it. Why not last it all? Because that's where we are at the moment. They're trying to save. Everyone's trying to save, and there's a bit of a, you know, sort of existence that's a bit bleak, isn't it? Oh, don't switch that on. But why don't they just gamify it? Get these smart makers, like Google Homes and stuff like that, to speak. Actually speak. So, if you're doing this scheme and you've got to switch something on, like the oven, you get the smart meter saying, uh-oh, hang on, hey, that's a bit energy intensive, isn't it? Do you really want to switch it on? Have you tried it in that food raw? If you do, you win £5.
Sorry, kids, we're not having dinner tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry, kids. Yeah. Or even putting the heat, central heating on. Hang on a sec. Looks like you're switching the central heating on. Have you tried putting on a jumper? You know, that kind of smart meter. I'd love that with you. I think it'd be brilliant. She said, oh, yeah, you're right. You learn £5. Oh, brilliant.
If it'd be your voice, probably not.
That's like, what voice would you like on there, though? It's like what's it called? The sat-navs, isn't it? What voice would you like on there? Or even like, oh, hang on, looks like you're running. My son, Monty, runs a bath all the time. He's obsessed with bath. He said, I'm going to charge you a tenner for a bath now, Monty. It's ridiculous. You can't just have a bath every night. No. Have a shower or don't wash. In fact, let me get a smart meter. Uh-oh, looks like you're running a bath. We tried not washing. No one really cares. Yeah. Don't wash. It's all right. Save some money. Be a stinker, but save some money. I think that's the way forward. I think we need to get more smart in our homes. Like suggestions, rather than Google. You know, sometimes Google, I don't know if it happens in the office, you're talking and Google starts talking, thinking you're talking to them, you know, or Siri or whatever that. You shut up, you fool. I'm looking at Wikipedia. I find no answers for that. I'm not talking to you, you bloody idiot. You're arguing with a smart Peter. Yeah, yeah. But I think just get them more smart, you know, get them more smart and really get them interacting with you and telling you things you want to know in the house, how to save a bit of money. That'd be good, wouldn't it? Really smart meters. Super smart. Yeah. Super smart meters. Yeah.
So going back to the whole Andrew Bailey's mind games and just getting people to spend less.
Oh, you'll be in the gutter this time next year. Victorian times, it'll be like, yes.
So the thinking there is for hopefully to kind of reduce the length of recession actually by short, sharp shock, people slowing their spending, bringing inflation down, and then hopefully from that we sort of just start to regenerate, do we?
Yeah.
Is that the plan?
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, amongst all doom and gloom, Andrew Doommonger Bailey there saying, oh, you've been old shorts this time next year with no clothes, we stinking dirt in the gutter. Yes, because me worst recession ever. Yes. Dickhead. I just said, you dickhead. I thought that. What are you saying that for? We know a lot of it's based on confidence and sentiment in the markets and stuff. But you're trying to scare the living crap out of people. Stop it. But the thing is, right, there was a bit of good news in there because money markets are now pricing the peak interest rate of around about 4.75%. And that's down from earlier this week, which was close to 5%. And down, a long way down from after the mini-budget. It wasn't a mini-budget, was it? Imagine if we did a big budget. But it was they were pricing in 6.25% peak interest rates.
Yeah.
And now it's down to 4.75%. So it's going in the right direction. But, yeah, I mean, they're trying to say, why am I doing this? That was Andrew Bailey's first question to himself in the press conference of the bank. Nice. Why am I doing this? So, sorry, who asked that, Andrew? Can I ask the questions? It's like if you're a journalist, Andrew, that's our job. You're asking questions to yourself? Oh, okay, yeah, that's good. Ask me that
next question from Andrew.
Yeah, from Andrew Bailey, the man at the front with the microphone facing
you.
Why are you doing this? Andrew, you're still asking the questions. Shh, I've got all my questions in script here. I can't take questions not on this document here.
He spends the whole press conference.
Yes.
Since nobody else.
Is. You're looking very smart, Andrew. Thank you very much. Yes. Is that a new suit, Andrew? Yes, it is. But I didn't spend too much on it because, of course, cost of living crisis.
Yeah. Well, that's an excellent question, Andrew.
Yeah. Did I tell you sometimes I get CEOs that do that? It's brilliant.
No?
So sometimes if a CEO comes on, I do say to them, is there any questions you want me to ask beforehand? You know, because essentially I may ask questions and I may miss something, you know. I'll go through, you know, this, the news, talk about your news out, what's coming up. I say, is there anything you want me to ask? And they say, oh, in fact, yes. and they'll give me a question, for example, because that's touching on something they see as relevant. And sometimes I ask that question they've given me, and they say, oh, that's a good question.
That is an excellent question. Yeah. Really,
I know, I know, you wrote it. I do mumble that in the background. Well, you wrote it, you fool. that's a very good question, Justin. Yes, let me think. And then pretend like it's off the cuff. No, don't. I don't mind the old question on that, but don't pretend it's off the cuff and just impulsive.
It's all playing up to the act, isn't it?
It's very good question.
Showbiz.
Yeah. But anyway, so the thing is, though, right? The problem is that this... I do believe we're in for a really bad recession. I mean, I don't think the markets... I think the markets pretty much, you know... The big falls happened. I've said that quite a few times. And now we're bumping on the bottom. There will be some companies that come out with results that are not good, below expectations, that will go lower. Of course there will. Or unexpected news, bad news from companies. And that's why you've still got to find companies that are going to not be too badly hit over the next 6 to 12 months. Because, you know, interest rates will still be high in 6 months. And inflation will be quite high. So they're reckoned to be coming down mid-2023. But there'll be companies, of course, you know, when you report financials, it's a lagging factor. It's like, by the time you report those numbers, they're 3 to 6 months out of date. So I think there will be a lot of companies struggling. But I think the market generally, we've seen we're close to a bottom, I think, I hope. Just look at the falls and where we are at the moment. I mean, you're starting to see the FTSE AIM all-in share index went down to 775, which was the lowest. Now we're at 815, I think. And it's retested that low a few times. So I think we're close to bottom. But... I'm quite worried about the lagging factor that these central banks are looking at, because they look at employment stuff. They have what's called a dual mandate, which is stable prices. They've got to do that and keep employment high. When one starts to affect the other, of course, that will be the problem. I think that will happen. I think we will see employment and unemployment going up because, of course, if you're an economy that's selling less and you're encouraging everyone to buy less, then less is produced. And so you don't need the amount of employees you've got. If you're not selling less, your costs have gone up. You have to lay people off. You know, employees, people are one of the biggest costs you have as an employer. So you'll start laying people off. So I do think we'll have a bit of pain there. But the thing is, I don't know if you notice, you know, the interest rates have come down, the expectations come down because there's sensible fiscal policy now from Sunak and Hunt. But they're focusing on this metric called debt to GDP. Do you know what that means? Stephen Peter. Debt to GDP. Do you understand what that is, what the ratio is?
Nope. No idea.
Peter?
Well, national debt as a proportion of gross domestic product.
Yes, that's it.
There you go. Thanks.
That's thank smart, Peter. Smart. Thanks very much. Our smart Peter.
Well, it kind of gives it away, doesn't it? In the name,
yeah, it does, like, yes. It's a clue. Yes, you could have had a stab in the dark at that one, Pete, Steve, I think. If it, you know, it wouldn't have been that hard.
You've got
debt to GDP. So it's a ratio. So let's, you know, GDP is all the goods and services, you know, gross domestic product, all the goods and services the country produces, and it's basically the revenue of that, the sales of that, you know. So let's say your business, Steve, let's say you turn over £1 million a year, all right? And then your debt is £1 million a year, you know. You've got a debt to GDP of 100% there, because the debt is exactly the same as your turnover, which a lot of countries, they see as that as, you know, they shouldn't go above that. They say that's not a good thing. You know, I think the British government are around about 95%, but we're nowhere near, you know, the top end of the scale. Like, you've got even America, 130% debt. So they've got more debt than they've got GDP, you know. And there's countries like, I think, Venezuela on 500%. There's like even Japan, I think, is on 200%. But most, in fact, I think France are bigger than us, Spain's bigger than us. You know, only Germany, pretty much, in the Eurozone is below us, about 86%. But we're in 95%. But Sunak and, you know, Hunt are focusing on that. And they're focusing on it by bringing costs down and also so trying to bring the debt down. But what they don't understand, there's two sides to that ratio. Of course, there's debt and there's GDP. Fine, try and bring the debt down. That's good. But you're not focusing on trying to bring the GDP up. So it seemed to me at the moment not focusing on growth, which Liz Truss was all about the growth and ignoring the debt, which you shouldn't do either. but you should focus on two bits of that. So, for example, Steve, if you focus on the growth in your business and you push growth up to now £2 million a year and your debt still remains at £1 million, your debt to GDP is then 50%. So, it's good. Now, that's a good way of doing it. But what Sunak's doing and the thing, they're trying to bring the debt down, so, say to half a million. And so, again, this ratio will still be 50%. But the problem is, if growth is slowing going forward, which it will do because we're going into recession, you'll have a bigger problem with that debt. So one of the best things you can do is try and grow your way out of it, but also keep an eye on the debt. So do you see what I'm trying to say? They're not really focusing on growing the GDP. They're focusing on cutting costs and going, a lot of people are saying, going back to austerity that we had after the great financial crash, which didn't help anyone. So I'm worried because if anything, and also from a government point of view, and inflation, when inflation is rife, of course, things cost more. So your GDP goes up. So that will cover the debt. And obviously, the bank will, you know, issue bonds on debt based on, they raise money based on today's interest rates. So if they loan out sort of, you know, bonds worth, say, 5%, for example, or and then, you know, GDP goes up because of just inflation, that helps them. You can inflate your way out of debt. It's a very clever trick to do, but they don't seem to be doing that now. And I'm worried at the moment, we are in a lag factor, and it's happened with QE, for example, when they started on quantitative easing and they started printing money. And of course, that brings interest rates down. There's loads of money swashing around the markets. It pushes asset prices up, stock market up. There's nowhere else to put your money. You can't put them in bonds. There's no interest rate there. You know, you can't put it in a bank. There's no. So the market was the only place in town. And so it pushed up. And we saw a lagging factor of that. And that you know, many people say, oh, it's the war in Ukraine. No, it wasn't. It wasn't the war in Ukraine. If you look at the figures and the bank balances, the central banks, they went up massively printing money and the stock market prices went up crazily. So that was, and that took a long time to happen. People say it may be inflationary. Maybe, yes, it was inflationary, massively inflationary. And now they're doing the opposite of that. I think they're going to overshoot. Like they've overshot last time, they're going to overshoot again. They're rising too fast, especially the Fed. The Fed has gone from 0% to 4% in like a few months. And I'm thinking, you're going to kill the economy. And I think, honestly, this time next year, you'll see central banks having to unwind their sort of interest rates because they're going to kill the economy. They're going to kill the economy dead, pretty much. And that's the big worry. They're overshooting. They're going from boom to bust to boom, and it's going back and forth. They need a bit of moderation here. You know, just sit on where we're on now, 3%, and see what happens. Because I think we're going to have some big worries. And I think there will be a big recession on record, as Andrew Bailey said. So it's a bit worrying, that's all. Just don't make any sense whatsoever, that, you know?
Yeah. So how is this going to affect our stocks then?
Well, I think, yeah, exactly. It depends on the company.
Good question there from the man at the back.
Yes, good question there with the man with the big ears. yeah, man with a funny face. Yes, you at the back there.
the ugly guy at the back.
Yeah, the ugly guy with the armpit sweating. Well, like I say, if your companies, this, at the moment, I've been saying, I don't know if you look at the webinar, of course you joined the webinar on Wednesday, but my stock picking strategy has become a bit more conservative. And normally when top three filters on my strategy was growth, most important thing of all for small cap stocks, do they have growth? How do you measure that growth? And I measure that growth in top line, first and foremost, revenue. Are they achieving top line growth of 20% year on year? Because that's very important. That says basically, regardless of the macro environment, this company is still growing. You know, there's validation for the sales and the services they sell. People are buying them at an increasing level, 20% year on year. Now, even if you apply that filter on companies, you wheedle out a lot of crap because most companies aren't doing that and they won't do that going forward. So first and foremost, get that. Then you look at value. Is the company at a good valuation? Remember, not overpaying for an asset, like anything. When you buy something, when you just buy a share of a business, that's what you are when you buy stocks. Remember that. You're buying a share of a business. You don't want to overpay for that business. You know, you want to have fair value. And if the company is growing, that value will grow. So I look at now a metric of EV, enterprise value, which we know what that is, don't we? Steve, come on. What's enterprise value? Come on. Come on. Right, you know what market cap is, yeah?
Yes.
Market cap is the share price times by the shares in issue. So say you've got 100 million shares, a pound a share. What's the market cap, Steve? 100 million shares, pound a share. What's the market capitalization of that company?
100.
100 what, Steve? Bananas?
Million.
Million what? 100 million what?
Dollars, pounds, whatever.
Yeah, but it's pounds. That's if we're talking about pounds. That's $100 million. Yes, yes. Now, if that company's got debt, it's not. That's just basically the shares all added up together. That's the market cap of the company. That's a rough valuation. But you're not taking into account anything on the balance sheet at all, are you? So how do you value that? If you want to buy that company, you wouldn't just say, okay, add all the shares up, times by pounds, 100 million, I give you 100 million for it. Because, hang on, say the company's got debt, you know? That's going to cost you money. That's a liability you have to pay. So if that company had, say, 10 million debt, you'd add that on top, okay? Because it makes the company more expensive. So you'd say, okay, enterprise value, add that on top. So they got 10 million debt, that's okay. And they go, oh, hang on, they've got 20 million in cash. So they've got 10 million debt, 20 million, so I can pay off that, you know, that 10 million debt with 20 million cash, plus have 10 million. So basically, take that off, so then the company is then worth 90 million. Oh, nice and cheap. Oh, it's good. So that's enterprise value. So enterprise value, get that, and I say, okay, how many multiples of that, because the earnings, for example, how many times would it take the earnings to buy that company? And so I look for growing companies, their EBITDA, no more than 10 times their enterprise value, sorry, no more than 10 times 1 year's earnings. You know, that makes sure for a growing company, you're not overpaying. But also what that means is the company has to be EBITDA positive. Previously, I said, if a company has cash to get to profitability, I'll look at them. Now I'm not going to. The market is not paying or not valuing companies with future profits potential. It doesn't want to do that because they're worried about the future. And that'll flip, you know, sooner or later. But so, so profits as a growth valuation, then they have to be profitable. So those two things. So as long as you've got that, you know, good valuation, good growth company, you should be fine. I think the market is sort of bottoming in. And it may take months to bottom, but hopefully you go, pick stocks are going to be doing well, you know, growing regardless of the macro environment. And so that's mean you have to be more stock selective. But, I am worried about the economy a little bit. And I just think that central banks are overshooting and they're overdoing it a little bit and they're not focusing on growth. I think Truss and, you know, Kuerteng, a little bit of growth was good, but not all growth, completely disregarding debt. And that's why the money markets went mad. They're going, hang on a second, you're going for growth, but you can't pay for any of it. That's nuts. Doesn't make any sense. So, and yet now Sunak and Hunt a little bit, they are very sensible, but where's the growth coming from? Where, you know, how are you going to improve the... In fact, did you see Paddy's list of 10 things? He said, I don't know if he... Did he copy that from someone? Did you see that?
If he didn't copy it, he's got a lot of time on his hands.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah, because
it's like a manifesto.
Yeah, but he said on WhatsApp, he said, wouldn't it be nice if the government had a plan to grow the economy? And I said, you've been reading my Twitter, haven't you? Because I did say this. And fair enough, we've got the Bank of England saying it's going to be the worst recession ever. Rishi and Hunt saying, oh, we're going to cut down debt. And I said, where's the plan to invest in the future to grow the economy? Where's that? And then Paddy said, I'm really on Twitter. And he said, here's 10 ideas off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's like an essay.
In fact, why don't you pour a drink? Have you got it up there? Have you got it up there, the 10 points? Have you got it there?
Yep.
Go on,
yes, I have.
Can you read them a second?
Okay. It'll take a while. Rejoin the single market.
Yeah, rejoin the single market.
Number one, rejoin the single market. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, I'll give the headlines. Number two, compulsory purchase of unused brownfield sites. Yeah. Number three, aggressively invest in green energy funded by windfall taxes on fossil fuels and banks. Mm-hmm. Number four, rent control to make rent an appropriate percent of average income for an area. Number five, triple council tax on empty properties. Number six, simplify tax code and go after corporate tax avoidance. It's quite personal some of this stuff, isn't it? because it says go after corporate tax avoidance with the same energy they go after freelancers. Number seven, investigate COVID fraud. Yeah. Number eight, set up cross-party education department to decide on education policy for the next 20 years. Number nine, tax breaks for companies investing in new technology and automation. Number 10, put the same effort into addressing poor diets and lack of exercise as they do with combating COVID. Yeah, I agree with that one. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That would help. And it's also number 11, charge utility companies by the hour for roadworks to force them to complete work as quickly as possible. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but do you know what? As yet, have you seen anything from Sunak and Hunt that's promoting investing or growing the economy in some way? I haven't. I've
no,
said,
but don't you think it's part of, there must be part of a strategy that they're kind of getting the house in order
first. Yeah, hopefully. I think I haven't looked deeply into their manifesto or what they're basing stuff on. But, you know...
And that, also, they can change it as well, though, can't they? You know, this is just a start, and then they'll just slightly amend it as it's kind of going on.
Yeah.
I have a lot more trust in them than I had.
No, I do.
Because that was just, that was terrifying a few weeks, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, it was. Like A-level students get up there, you know, looking at their sort of fantasy, sort of financial sort of goals and saying, oh, just growth. How are you going to pay for it? All right, we're going to grow. Where's the money coming from?
But that's it.
They were focused on the GDP alone. That's what I'm saying. They weren't focused on the debt side of the GDP, you know, equation ratio. Now, at the moment, you know, the other guys, sensible fiscal guys, all very sensible. Two accountants now, pretty much two chancellors. We have got a double chancellor, haven't we? Really, because yes, Rishi was a chancellor, and now Hunt's the chancellor. We've got two bean counters looking at the costs and debt, and thinking, hang on, guys. Where's the inspiration here? Where's the growth coming from? And I believe in that. I think things like, I mean, I did post this out. Did you know, right? Of the top 20 biggest offshore wind farms in the world, the UK has 11 of them. That's massive. Yeah. You know, that including China, anywhere in the world. We are the top four, first and foremost, Hornsea 1 project, Hornsea 2 project. Then there's Moray East, Triton Knoll. And literally, we are 11 of the biggest in the world. We are world leaders in offshore wind farms. But what's bloody annoying is that we don't own those wind farms. A company called Ørsted do, you know, a Dutch company. And not only that, the wind farms themselves, the windmills, the spinny things, they are built by German, Dutch and Japanese companies. I mean, there's a Hull, I think there's a guy just replied to me saying there's a construction plant in Hull for the turbine stuff. So Ørsted build them. So it's annoying that, you know, we considering we're world leaders in that field, why aren't we world leaders in the, you know, the creation and the production, the manufacturing of them? Because we should be. And that kind of thing is not going to stop. You know, renewables, you see the odd, you know, imbecile on Twitter saying, we should scrap renewables and go net zero and go out oil and gas. It's so expensive. No, it's not. Renewables are now the cheapest form of, you know, electricity production ever. It gets tied in with the price of gas, and that's the problem. So going forward, operationally, they are so cheap to generate electricity. That's the way forward, you know? Don't they understand that? It's not going away. We're all heading towards net zero, and it's on cheaper electricity. So why not invest massively in that? Be at the forefront. Be the people creating these wind farms. You know, be ways of finding even more efficient, you know, windmills, whatever, you come up with new technology. Be at the cutting edge of that. Plough money into that, because it's not going to go to waste. It'll be a massive investment. And I think things like this, you know, thinking ahead of the next 10, 20 years, not just down the road there, saying, how will the budget look next year? Don't worry about that too much. And it's now sort of people arguing, economists saying they are focusing on this ridiculous arbitrary figure of debt GDP. There's no hard and fast rule because it changes. You know, if the debt goes down or debt becomes cheaper or GDP grows, then it brings the figure down. So they are focusing on this arbitrary sort of figure and worry about it. It doesn't affect America. They're 130%, you know, or even other countries. It doesn't matter too much. What they need to do is focus on the job creation side of it. You know, ignore stable price from debt. Just don't go crazy on debt, because they won't anyway. They're too sensible bean counters. But also, they need a bit of inspiration here. We need to. Paddy's right there on saying, give massive, you know, be the country that countries want to come to, because there's massive tax breaks to, you know, create jobs in this country. Do that, you know, give loads of tax breaks for innovation, automation, all that kind of stuff that's going to be around for years and years, and make it a no-brainer for the, you know, cutting edge countries, companies come here and invest here. Make it really get it, you know, accelerating the economy. That's what I'm worried about. They're just a little bit too sensible, old Jeremy and Rishi. They're like, you know, two accountants looking through the spreadsheets. Okay, where's the inspiration, guys? And it, obviously, you know, Boris was the opposite side of that. He was a bit of a BS artist, wasn't he? Saying, oh, Britain's going to be the biggest in the world. And then he would leave the detail to somebody else. We're going to be cutting-edge country. Then he said, right, you sort that out. Someone else do the detail on that.
Yeah.
I've given the big speech. That's all I need to do. But, you know, I think we need a bit of that. It's almost like we are humans, it's like extremes, going from one extreme to the other, don't they? It's rather, what about the middle ground here? Can't we just, you know, take a bit of Truss's growth policy and Sunak and Hunt's sort of debt sort of worry, and then put that together a little bit and go for it, you know?
Yeah, that would be crazy. Yeah. Common sense.
Yes, exactly. My hope is, like, they are thinking that way. But, I mean, like you say, it's common sense, isn't it? It's obvious, fairly obvious.
Yeah.
Maybe their policy is just focused on, the debt.
Well, I think Rishi is a bit, he doesn't like the bad press. You know, he seems to switch a little bit. It can be a bad thing if you just listen to all the haters and then say, no, we're doing, did you see COP 27 or 26, I don't know what it was. He wasn't going to that, was he? The climate crisis change thing. He wasn't going to go to that new conference. We had it here last year, didn't we? In Edinburgh. And they're handing over. And he said, I won't be going. It was announced he wasn't going to it. I said, well, that's a bit odd. Climate crisis, one of the biggest things around, you know, all time. Mm. And then he said he's not going. And now he said, I am going. I'm going, yeah. You said you weren't. No, I didn't say I wasn't. I said, I need to get the budget ready for the 17th of November. If I get all that done, if I get my homework done, I'm allowed out. Mummy said I can come if I get my homework done. So Jeremy said I can come.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he's now good. So I think, and he's getting a little kickback from economists saying you are focusing a little too much on the costs and cuts, cost cutting and all that stuff, taking us back to austerity. We don't need that. You need to grow because that's going to make the recession worse. It really is. So you need to. They do need a little bit of growth there to, you know, to limit the economic hit from this recession. Because let's be honest, you know, it's going to be high costs. Do you know most people? I did ask my father because of car sales. Everyone focuses on mortgages. In fact, do you know what? It's a good little. What's that guy who does Dragon's Den? The BBC guy. What's his name? You know, you got funny eyes and a bald head.
Evan Davis.
Evan Davis. That's it. Yes.
Yeah.
Has he got funny eyes?
Well, I don't know. Is he? Funny eyes.
Isn't one of his eyes, you know, a bit friendly?
Oh, yeah.
A bit friendly.
A lazy eye.
A bit friendly to the other. It's a bit lazy. Yeah. It? Come on, get up. You know, the one eye wakes up half an hour before the other. Come on, up you get. the other eye is encouraging. Oi, you, your lazy eye, get up.
Yeah. The other one's really dynamic and goes out and parties a lot.
Right, up and at him, guys. And the other eye is like, oh, no, not again. I've been up late last night.
I'm going to stay in.
Get up, you lazy sod. Come on. Anyway, I was listening to a podcast yesterday by him. It's a money podcast. It's very good. People say the housing market's worrying. And they had basically an estate agent, a mortgage broker. And the estate agent on there was saying, it's now gone very quickly from a seller's market to a buyer's market. And we have people dropping out. So before, we didn't have any dropping out. Up until like 3 months ago, we had no one dropping out. And then obviously the trust thing came in and people started putting their mortgage products on the market. And so now we've got one in three dropping out. And that's quite worrying. So first of all, you've got people and first-time buyers. They costed everything. They got the mortgage. Now they can't afford it. And so they're dropping out. And then you've got the people mid-chain, which affects everyone, who, someone dropping out from buying their property or the property they're buying is almost too expensive now. And they're dropping out, so it affects the entire chain. So it is a bit worrying at the moment, and it's not going to get easier for how long? I mean, interest rates are going to be high now for a long time. So if you're looking to, I think I said before, I think the market will rally first. Housing market will have a bit of a tough time. And so if you want to buy a new house, I think over the next 6-12 months would be a good time if you don't need a
Well, me and Pete were saying that in France, weren't we? It was like, it could actually be a good buyer's market in a year or two.
It's worth listening to that, honestly, a little podcast. What's it called? I'll get up there. But it's Evan Davis money thing. And I thought, that's very interesting. But already, this estate agent lady was saying, it's changed the fastest she's ever known. It's called The Bottom Line.
But house prices aren't coming down yet, though, are they?
No, but they're right. I mean, do you see Lloyds in there? They will do, though. They will do. I've noticed that more coming on because I'm, registered with the apps, the Right Move, the On Market, and Zoopla. And I've noticed now more coming on. I mean, some people have taken their houses off for sale, but there is now where there was a problem with lack of stock. Now stock is coming on because she said it's awful. Actually, she said I've been in someone's house who were crying. There's a lady who's talking to, obviously no names, but she's sitting in a house that's worth $750,000 and she has no money. And she's like, I need to sell the house. I've got to sell it. I can't afford it. I can't afford to even feed my kids.
Yeah.
And so there's a situation like that where, assets are rich. Probably, well, I don't know if they're asset rich. That's the problem, isn't it? When you get cheap money, it's extremes, isn't it? You've got cheap money, like you said, Steve, right, where interest rates are very low, people stretch themselves buying a house already. They say, okay, the mortgage is only 1.25%. I'll stretch myself, could buy a bigger house. But not realising, you know, interest rates, that is historically low. If they revert to mean, you know, and your business takes it, if you're running a business or you get laid off, that's a nightmare situation. And that's going to happen. Mm. That is going to happen. But Lloyds did say they see house prices falling by 8-10% over the next year.
But it's also how over-leveraged people are in terms of actually, if they've got, you know, a small deposit or whatever, and they've gone very large on their multiples, income multiples, and then, like you say, lose your job or whatever, you can quickly, house of cards can quickly come tumbling down, can't it?
Yeah. And you scary. Imagine a few of those chains breaking up and falling down, and people not being able to sell the house. That's worrying. So then you will have distressed sellers, and that means cheaper houses on the market. Okay, it's not good for a lot of people, but it's good for others. So I think the housing market will always be buoyant in this country, because we all want to be homeowners, don't we? Hey,
George Michael,
he's a homeowner, lovely house.
I don't think he is a homeowner anymore.
No, but he wasn't. But he was a big homeowner, Steve, really big one.
Yeah.
How many homes do you own?
Oh, I don't know, but he was obviously a massive homeowner.
Okay.
That's good to know.
Sorry. I met George Michael. Did I tell you that?
No.
Was it a Happy Snaps?
Yeah. It was my first day on the job. Yeah. Says, boss, you're not going to believe what's happened. George Michael's just crashed through the window. What? Are you drunk again, son? Get out. No, it's George Michael. Oh, George.
Wham, inside of the building.
Yeah, wham. George, we've got a front door, mate. You don't have to drive through. It's not a drive-through, literally a drive-through. Oh, all right. But he's quite bitchy about other people. Surprisingly, he's quite open, you know. I say bitchy, very gossipy. I don't know if bitchy is the right word, but very gossipy. That George, if we're recording this, you know, you'd be liable for things. But quite personable, you know. He almost like treats you like he's known you for a long time, you know. So where were we going to with that then?
Homeowners. Yes.
So also, yeah, and also car loans and all that stuff. People buy, you know, loans on cars and all that stuff. That's expensive. All that expensive. So you've got any kind of debt. It's like leverage. You're right. Anything. It's hard. Moderation is very hard. I always say this in life, you know, moderation is very hard. People say, everything in moderation. No, moderation is very hard. I can't go to the pub and have one pint. It's hard work. Last night.
I can't.
See, can you? No, can you really? Can't.
Yeah, I can. These days, I definitely, one, maybe two, that's it.
I can't.
I don't need any more than that.
Can you have one chocolate biscuit? Oh, I'll have a little treat.
Yes, like one biscuit. Absolutely.
Well, Peter, you are the abnormal then. You're an outlier.
No, I quite enjoy that. It's quite sort of masochistic in a way, isn't it? Because I quite like that. It's like, I'd like to have more, but it's quite a nice challenge not to.
Yeah, maybe you should try that challenge with harder drugs like crack. Yeah. I'm just going one injection or one snort. That's all, and I won't be addicted.
I did a little test recently, so I was eating too much chocolate. So rather than buy less chocolate, I bought more chocolate. So I've now got a box of like 48 Boosts and 48 picnic bars, like, you know, the cash and carry kind of style boxes.
Right.
Yeah. And I was thinking this could either go really badly, and I could just basically indulge on these like boxes of chocolate, but it doesn't. It actually stops me eating it because I only have one chocolate bar a week now.
But you can do that.
There you go.
Hang on, so you've got a massive. I don't understand the
I didn't explain the whole story there. So what I was doing I was going to the supermarket. I was going to the supermarket and like buying a bit of chocolate there, and I ended up buying loads of chocolate. Whereas if there's loads in the house, it's almost like it's there, I can eat it, but I won't eat it. It's weird psychological thing for me.
All right. So rather than have the chocolate in the supermarket, you buy all that and put it in your house.
I buy it all in the house, but knowing that I could eat it all in the house, I don't eat it all in the house. Weird.
Do you just open the cupboard and look and say, ooh, you tempting lot. I'm not going to have you today.
I do sit in the living room going, chocolate. But yeah, you know, I'm very
that's restraining. That's the extreme version of what I'm saying. It's like you're almost getting a masochistic kind of kick out, not having that temptation there.
That's a good thing. But
don't buy it and it's not there. So,
but that's it. But if you achieve that moderation in life on most things, from investing to most things, you know, you'll do fine. You'll do fine. But that's the trouble with the economy. We've gone from ultra low interest rates and ploughing money into the stock market like crazy with QE now to ramping up interest rates and then cutting back in costs and all that stuff, and then selling, you know, QT, it's gone from one extreme to the other. And that's the worry. I think it was Charlie. Also, there's lots of people on leverage with stocks. You know, they've got spread betting accounts. They've got leverage. You can get leverage with these accounts. And that's dangerous. It really is dangerous. You know, when the stock market's going down, you say, oh, I'll take basically a loan on the back spread. And you get margin calls, of course, and that's what happened. Even leverage in the pension funds. That's nuts, isn't it? You realise pensions, especially sensible investments. You assume these pension people, the companies, are investing sensibly, and yet they're leveraged to the high hilt. It's okay when the markets are going up. But when the markets are going down, you're basing all your leverage on the asset price that you're leveraged on. It's a house of cards, you know, it goes nuts, yeah. It topples. And so I think it was Charlie Munger, you know, Charlie Munger is Warren Buffett's right-hand man. He said, you are stupid if you use leverage. He said, and if you're stupid, you shouldn't be using leverage. And so it makes sense. He said, you are stupid, because there was three of them. Do you know, there was Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett. There's a third guy at the start of Berkshire Hathaway. I can't think of his name, and that says a lot, basically. But Charlie and Warren said, we always knew we were going to be well off. We knew we were going to be rich. It took time, bit of patience. We knew that. But the third guy tried to do it on leverage. He tried to get fast, quicker, and he went broke there to buy him out of Berkshire Hathaway. He went bust through debt. So that's a good lesson there, you know, leverage. And I think at the moment, and another quote from Buffett said, when the tide goes out, you see who's, you know, got no trunks on, basically, who's in trouble, you know, and that's what's going to happen with the markets, and especially with mortgage market, you'll see the problem now already, the stress fractures beginning to show. People who over-leverage themselves, you know, overstretch themselves on cheap money, it's like on crack almost, and now they've got a problem, a real problem, because, you know, that money is costing a lot more. They've got a remortgage and they can't afford it. And so, yeah, it's a bit scary situation. So the real world economy is scary. That's why now you have to be even more selective about stock picking, because over the next 6-12 months, you'll see lots of companies coming out, I think, with bad or below expectation reports, because the sales top line isn't there and their costs are going up. So that's a bit of a worry. But that's why, you know, I largely think anyway, I'm, you know, stocks I hold, I'm quite comfortable with. But I am now looking, going forward, going to be even more selective. That's why in a bear market, you learn 10 times as much. In fact, here's a good little stat. Bear market and bull markets, right? Pretty much bear markets last about 1 year, pretty much 1 year to 18 months. Bull markets last 3 to 5 years without a correction. So about 5 times. But you will learn 5 times as much in a bear market as you will in a bull market. Because you can make mistakes in a bull market. Doesn't really matter. When there's cheap money around, the markets are going up, that's fine. You can make a mistake and, you know, the company may drop 10, 15%. In a bull market, that company will just fall off a cliff. And so you've got to be ultra selective. And I see you're learning a lot more in a bear market than a bull market. And even if you see the big stocks in America, take the hammering.
Yeah.
All of it, even good stocks. This is why Buffett, like times like this, love it. Because just look at this. Facebook, right, is down 77% from 422 days ago, this high. That's Facebook, right? Amazon, right? Amazon's a good business, isn't it? Down 52%.
But that's from a high from COVID, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but still down 52%. Not seen. So last seen 18th of March 2020, so it's down now to Facebook is down to levels not seen since 2015. That's Amazon. What's the other one? Alphabet, Google. Where's Google? Let me find that. Google is down 44%. So these are good companies. So that's why in situations like this, if you've got spare cash, you can upgrade your stock selection and you'll get decent returns going forward. Because these companies will get back to their highs, no doubt.
Not sure about Facebook.
No,
if Facebook. He keeps on his metaverse.
I wouldn't even touch that. Mm. Isn't that crap? No. Isn't it rubbish? Have you seen the graphics and all that? It's like, why do you want it looking like a stupid emoji in a silly world? I mean, people are talking about that's going to be the next big thing. I don't. Maybe in surgery or stuff like that. I don't know certain sectors, but not generally going out and hanging about. Just with your friends in metaverse.
More than anything, I hope it's not the next big thing, because I'm not being funny. It's bad enough now with kids on their phones just not looking up and socialising in general. Can you imagine them putting headsets on and not even being in the actual world? Just like, oh, God.
Yeah. But do you know what's up, boys? What's not up? What's hitting close to hitting highs? Well, I was looking through Monty and Fred stocks, who we do a little podcast now and again. McDonald's. And I said,
oh, really?
The bear hasn't taken a bite out of McDonald's. Maybe it's a health eater.
Oh, but, nice.
Do you know what? Can I just say something about McDonald's?
Yes, you can, Stephen.
Yes, go on, Steve.
So I got their app. And me. Yeah, yeah. So I buy everything now through the app because you get offers and stuff on it. So you get generally your food cheaper. And also they do a reward scheme now. So the more you spend, the more points you get, and then you get more
that's
free
almost,
stuff.
I'll be honest, Steve, that's almost like a badge of disgrace, isn't it? The more points you get at McDonald's. It really is. I've got loads of points from McDonald's.
I got about 2 Big Mac meals in my point system at the moment. Anyway, but I have noticed, because I've been working away quite a bit, and McDonald's is always, especially when I'm on an early job in London, is like, I'll just get McDonald's breakfast, because it's just easy. Yeah. But I've noticed, because I have been eating more McDonald's, they send you more offers, and they work out your... they genuinely have worked out my trends. Like,
and
most of the times they get it spot on. I'm like, yeah, I do fancy a bacon roll this morning. I go to McDonald's. Yeah. And very clever.
They'll send you a little notification. Hello, fatty. Ah, Steve, do you want a bacon roll this morning? We'll give you a point.
Does the reward scheme also include, like, you know, health checkups?
No. Are you kidding?
The only reason I know it's customized as well, because I asked my mum, who doesn't use it very often. And basically she has no offers for reward
they know they've got a big catch there. Oh, Steve, it's reel him in. Evie got him on the app. He's addicted to the app. Reel him in. I know it is, but I mean that kind of thing. You think, okay, and even that stand stock selection. You think, okay. I mean, the McDonald's burger, whatever, the cheeseburger went up by like 20%, didn't it? From 99 pence to 120, something like that recently. But people can still afford that 20 pence, you know? People will still go in there. They're not going to stop cutting back on burgers because that 20 pence is not a huge markup, really, is it, in the grand scheme of things? So that kind of thing, fast food, stuff like that.
Well, and also, like, actually, you know, McDonald's, all jokes aside, eating out, it's a cheap eating out, isn't it? So it may well do really well in this recession. So, yes, it may be a really good one to look at.
Rather than go to a gourmet burger or something, you know, they take you to McDonald's now, the kids, you know, rather than something like that. So, it's not been much news. What's annoying is, there's not been much news on stocks. So I don't know. Any stocks you want to mention, boys, anything at all?
No, there's nothing, is there? There's nothing. I'm just sort of sitting and holding and slightly praying.
Yeah, I think, I do think we'll have rallies. And also companies reporting the report that is showing growth still. I think they'll do very well. But at the moment, the market doesn't believe most companies until they report and show something. So it's a holding pattern. But quickly, what do you think of Elon Musk, right? And this $8 tick thing. Is that absolute nonsense? It's like, you were saying, but we can deal with the bots. And if everyone gets verified, you pay $8 a month, we'll deal with the bots. So you can deal with it anyway, can't you? If, without having $8 a month. He's giving all kinds of reasons why now it's worth paying for this tick.
Also, I don't care, mainly because I'm not on Twitter. But also, aren't people with ticks anyway, like celebrities and things anyway? So does it really matter to the general of average person?
No, it doesn't. But he's saying now anyone can get it as long as you pay $8 a month. So
that takes away the purpose of a blue tick then, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, because when you're searching for someone, you want to make sure it's not a copy of someone. And sometimes if it's someone, like, you know, if you want to, you know, shout at Rishi Sunak or something, then you know it's Rishi because you've got a tick next to your name. Now, if you've got 10 Rishis with ticks next to their name, paying $8 a month, is this the best, the richest man in the world, is this the best, most creative idea you can come up with? I think him ramping Dogecoin was more creative than this. And that's when Dogecoin went through the roof. I think you should go back to doing that. I think you should just say, okay, listen, we're going to do a tick system for everyone, but you've got to pay in Doge. And of course, he's then pre-bought Doge. I think he's still holding Dogecoin. But that's what you should do. Just go back to ramping Twitter. Elon, it'd be a lot better for you.
Have you seen that documentary on BBC with him?
No. Is it worth watching?
It doesn't say much more than you probably already know, but it is quite interesting. There's a few little bits, like how many times he nearly went bust and stuff like that in his early days.
Well, he's just sacked half the Twitter staff, isn't he? And apparently there's going to be a legal problem because he didn't give any notice about that. And he just said, right, you're all sacked. You know, you've got some people to turn up the office, they can't get in. And he sacked half the staff. Someone said it's like 3,000 people or something. Is that how many people work at Twitter? That's nuts.
Globally, yeah. But then there's a lot of concerns over a lot of those people are responsible for managing the content, you know, in terms of, taking down incorrect or aggressive content or whatever.
I read the full article this morning. It's a very small minority of people in that department. Apparently, he's done more of like things like disabilities, people using it with disabilities and things like that. So more wrong ways of doing it rather than the safety and security way.
So he's saying, and he is focusing on it, he said Twitter's losing more than $4 million a day. And so basically Twitter's head of safety and integrity referred to approximately 50% cuts worldwide in the company.
Wow. I use Twitter a lot less now these days, definitely. I don't.
It's really rubbish. I don't know why you still use it. I
just dip into it a bit, but
no. I think it's good news, Steve. Do you know what? Now it's literally way ahead of any television broadcast news channels. Mm. You get news breaking on Twitter way before you'll see it on TV or anything or on radio. It is where
that's true.
Yeah, I mean, so I like that. You just get breaking news very quickly, and that's why I like it. And also, there's lots of good information on there, threads, and there are lots of good economists on there and news outlets. So I do like that side of it. Basically, anyone starts arguing stupid stuff now, I just ignore them at the start. I used to get involved with them, but don't bother.
Yeah.
But and finally, a poll, boys. When I did put this out last night, when are you putting up your Christmas decorations? These are the options. They're up this month, December, never. Steve, what are you going
15th.
With? That's this month, yeah? That's 8.2% of the vote got that. 1.5% of the vote got they're up already.
Is that me?
December is 66.8%, never 23.5%.
Yes, that's me.
Is it? Well, I assume some of those people as well don't celebrate Christmas. I voted, so I'm...
I'm a Jehovah's Witness.
But you know what? Yeah. Megan's been listening to Heart Xmas since it launched, which was late September.
It doesn't launch, just. It's on all year now.
Is it? No, it started on September. September started.
No, it doesn't. It's on all year now.
Is it?
You are kidding.
Megan will be gutted. I get in the car after she's driven it. It's on.
You're talking about traditional radio. It's on, online and on the app. It's on all year.
DAB, I mean, yeah, yeah. So, literally, I get in there with Monty. Turn that nonsense off. He says, what are you talking about? It's nice, Christmas. I said, Monty, it's September. He's like, oh, October. So there's pretty much 12 Christmas songs that we listen to on rotation every year. We could, save it for at least the last month. And now today, it's Christmas decorations go up in our house. I think, oh, my word.
Oh, dear. Oh, my Lord. Yeah. I just...
Didn't Megan almost admit last year by Christmas Day she was bored of
She was
Christmas.
Taking them down.
Yeah, she was taking them down.
That's it. They're up early, down early. They are literally Boxing Day pretty much. I know it's supposed to be traditional. All these nonsense. You've got 12 days before, 12 days after. Who cares? These people just pay attention to these, traditions. Like, they hold some gravitas. You can do what you want. You can do what you want. You can put them up when you want, take them down when you want. It's your life. Do we want? Yeah, but generally, she's sick of it by Boxing Day, so they're all back in the attic, pretty much.
Well, I've just had so many Christmases now. I'm like, I'm kind of done with Christmas. But is that really boring?
Yeah. I suppose if you're kids,
If you've got kids, it's brilliant. And if you're, I don't know, up until you're about 30, 35 or something, probably it's still quite a lot of fun in it.
But where does Steve fit in that category then? So he's about 30.
I like the social aspect of it, of just out and going out for food and drink more so than you probably would during the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Well, you can just stay in and eat your picnic bars, Steve.
Yeah, get through some of them, Steve. That's it. Yeah.
I have a picnic pie, but you only get chocolate bars.
Yeah, lovely. All right, boys. Where are we then? Anything else? That's it.
That's enough, isn't it?
Plenty. Yep.
Right.
Lovely. All right, boys. Speak next week. Bye-bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The contents of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.